Let not your heart be troubled. You are listening to the Sean Hannity Radio Show podcast. All right, so I have insomnia, but I've never slept better. And what's changed? Just a pillow. It's had such a positive impact on my life. And of course, I'm talking about MyPillow. I fall asleep faster, I stay asleep longer, and now you can too. Just go to MyPillow.com or call 800-919-6090. Use the promo code Hannity, and Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow, has the special four-pack. Now you get 40% off two MyPillow premiums and two Go Anywhere pillows. Now MyPillow is made here in the USA, has a 60-day unconditional money-back guarantee and a 10-year warranty. Go to MyPillow.com right now or call 800-919-6090, promo code Hannity, to get Mike Lindell's special four-pack offer. You get two MyPillow premium pillows and two Go Anywhere pillows for 40% off. And that means once those pillows arrive, you start getting the kind of peaceful and restful and comfortable and deep healing and recuperative sleep that you've been craving and you certainly deserve. MyPillow.com, promo code Hannity. You will love this pillow.
Hey, welcome to the Sean Hannity Show. It's Mark Simone here for Sean. He'll be back on Monday, but he's actually in Israel right now. And be sure you watch Hannity tonight on the Fox News Channel. He's got a big, big show tonight. He's going to interview the Israeli Prime Minister, Bibi Netanyahu, and they're going to actually take a helicopter ride over the Israeli-Palestinian border. Now, look at the work that Sean does. I walked a couple of blocks. I'll sit here for a few hours. He's in Israel. He's taking a helicopter down to the Palestinian border. This is going to be quite a show tonight on the Fox News Channel. In the meantime, we've got lots to talk about. President Trump just left the Treasury Department. He went over there to sign some executive orders. The big thing now is beginning this tax reform, not just lower taxes, but trying to streamline the whole process. So you probably just did your taxes. Can you figure it out? You know, a lot of people, I mean, unless you got the simplest thing in the world, you know, just a little one income and that, and no deductions, no investments, no. Maybe you could do your own tax form, but otherwise, it's impossible for anybody to really do their own taxes. So that's the beginning of a push for tax reform. Simplify the whole thing. Hey, you know, you might be saying, well, why? What's this? Is a no-brainer. Just simplify it to the tax system. Simple, easy. Bring the tax rates down. Bring the corporate tax down to the same low rate in every other country. Why would you have it so high? Why would you have this tax stuff so complicated? There's a reason for that. Democrats love it high, but some of these Republicans, it's more of a politician thing. All these politicians love this high corporate tax, complicated taxes. That way, all the companies have to come to them for every tax break, for every little carve out, every time they need something. And you got to come with an army of lobbyists and donations and money and buy everything you need. Once you lower it down to a nice low rate and you have a simplified tax form, they'll never hear from these corporations again. The lobbyists won't be showing up with big checkbooks. So that's part of the problem. But we finally have a president who isn't going to get swept up in all of that and will finally cut through all of that. So he's leaving the Treasury Department. There's a great thing there. He's had an incredible couple of weeks. You can tell when he's really doing well. There's one little measure of how, whenever you hear all the Democrats screaming about his tax return, we've got to see his tax return, that means he had the greatest week ever. If they're back to this tax return from last year, that was great. You know, there's this woman, a charity worker. She's an American. She was in Egypt doing charity work. She was seized and put in prison for no reason at all, wrongfully imprisoned. She's been there for years. Obama administration couldn't do a thing to get her out. Donald Trump goes to work with the Egyptian president, his people, and Egypt. They start negotiating. Woman is released yesterday. Did you see the story? No, of course you didn't. There's a news blackout on this. I know there was one story in the Washington Post, but with the headline, they didn't quite make it clear that it was Donald Trump and some great negotiating skill that finally got her released. And you ask all these news directors, hey, why aren't you all over this story? Well, it's a little, it's not really news. It's not. If President Obama had personally negotiated the release of a prisoner who had been held incorrectly for years, that would have been the front page of every newspaper. That would have been the first 20 minutes of Rachel Maddow. That's all you'd be hearing about all day long. But media blackout on the whole thing. Hey, did you know that former President Obama is now tampering with the French election? Yeah, he's actually involved in the French election, tampering with it, trying to influence it. You've got a conservative candidate who's anti-immigration, and after the awful terrorist incident, that may help the conservative. But President Obama pushing the liberal candidate. In fact, he's been on the phone colluding with him. Gee, another news blackout. You really don't read much about that, do you? Hey, Ann Coulter will be with us later, by the way. This will be interesting. Now, what's the latest on Berkeley? She was going to speak at Berkeley, and you'd think, she's a great speaker. You'd think students of no matter what side of the aisle you're on would be interested. Obviously, if you agree with her, you'd love to hear her speak. But even if you don't, if you disagree, it'd be really interesting to hear her speak, wouldn't it? So Berkeley, being your typical American college, trying to censor everything and anybody that disagrees with them. So the speech canceled, it's back on, it's canceled, it's back. She'll be with us later, and we'll find out what the latest is. I know lawyers are getting involved in this. It's the strangest phenomenon. You could be the most wacky, crazy, dangerous, far-left liberal. You're welcome on any college campus. But if you're a nice, orderly conservative, who very well mannered, going to just make a nice little speech. It might be blunt, but it's an interesting speech. Banned. It's not just banned. There's threats of rioting and throwing rocks and Molotov cocktails and violence. That's why they cancel it. But what kind of world have we come to where nobody, especially on a college campus, doesn't want to hear another point of view? Everybody's got to agree with everything. Hey, look at all this war with the Fox Network, all these New York Times and everybody going after them. You know, you got 500 liberal outlets, every inch of major media. All the networks are liberal. All the cable networks are liberal. All the major newspapers are liberal. So you got one network that might be conservative, the Fox Network. You have everybody going after them, trying to stop them, trying to silence them. It's like they want the old Soviet system where there's like one party controls the entire media, no dissenting views anywhere. Where's a Democrat out there? Hey, if you're a Democrat or a liberal, call me and explain this phenomenon to me. Why there can't be any opposing point of view ever, anywhere. 1-800-941-SHAWN is the number. 1-800-941-SHAWN. And next week, you know, they're going to try to push some tax legislation. And also, if you're a liberal or a Democrat, could you explain this desperate attempt to see Donald Trump's tax return from last year? Hey, remember Rachel Maddow a couple weeks ago? That was a tax return. How old was that? 5 years ago? Something like that. And what did he make? Was he made $200 million that year? He paid like millions in taxes, paid $38 million in taxes. But we must see last year. Now, remember, the one from years ago is around 2008. That's like right after the crash. You got to figure that was a bad year for him. So what are you going to see this time? That he made even more? And then all these crazy liberals and all these commentators keep saying we can't do tax reform and we can't let him pass any tax laws until we see his tax return, because we have to know if he's going to be personally affected by any of this. I mean, you really have to be Columbo. You really have to be Sherlock Holmes to figure out what his tax return might look like. Let me guess. He's in the highest possible tax bracket. He made a fortune. He's got tremendous deductions when it comes to real estate. Whenever you're in the real estate world, a lot of deductions involved. And let me guess, he's got massive investments, stocks, bonds, that kind of thing. There's capital gains, all those sort of deductions. So what is it we really need to see?
So we have obtained Donald Trump's tax returns tonight. His 1040 from the year 2005, the first time his federal tax returns have been made public, have been obtained by any news organization since he is a presidential candidate, let alone since he was president. They were obtained by investigative reporter David K. Johnston and his reporting shop, dcreport.org. These tax returns raise very interesting questions about how much the president's own proposed tax policies would improve his own personal bottom line. But they raise even more questions about what we haven't yet seen. Trump is the first president since the Watergate era to refuse to release his taxes of his own accord, which makes this release, who knows where it came from, both an interesting news development and potentially a historic one.
Yeah. Oh, that was riveting television. Riveting. By the end, we found out that Donald Trump made a lot of money and paid a lot of
breaking
taxes.
Breaking news now.
You know, here in New York, there was a blizzard that night. You remember that? It was during the blizzard. So everybody was stuck at home. That's the, you know, they said, oh, look at the ratings she got. It's because it was a blizzard. Everybody was stuck here. We had to watch it. It was so, I mean, what do you think you're going to see in these tax returns? You remember last year, towards the end of last year, there was something, people were demanding something from Hillary Clinton. They wanted her to release something, her medical records or something. You remember? And she was trying to distract. So she suddenly released her tax returns. And they were pretty shocking. It showed that Bill and Hillary Clinton last year made $18 million without having a job. Neither of them were working last year and still made $18 million. That was pretty amazing. Nobody heard about it. Nobody cared about it. Nobody read the tax returns. Hey, Barack Obama released his tax returns last year. Tell me what's in it. Yep, you see? Nobody remembers. Nobody reads these tax returns. Let's take a call. Let's go to Fran in Long Branch, New Jersey. Hey, Fran.
How are you?
Good.
Nice to talk to you.
Thanks.
I just wanted to comment on why the press is so obsessed with seeing President Trump's tax returns.
Yeah.
I think they don't have anything else to do. They really can't be that negative anymore. They're not as popular as they used to be with their opinions. And I think if they get a hold of his tax returns, they can make an issue out of any little thing he did or did not do. If you pay too much, they're saying, well, he makes too much money. If he didn't pay enough, they say he should pay more money, and they're going to compare it to anything he wants to do having to do with taxes.
Yeah.
So it's just another negativity.
Well, that's true. But, you know, the worst thing is at some point Donald Trump will release these taxes, and it'll be like the Rachel Maddow one. We'll be right back where we started from. First of all, his tax form is like literally 300 pages. Can you read this thing? I can't even read my tax return. You know, my accountant sends it to me before it's sent to the IRS. I'm supposed to approve it. I don't know what the hell it says. I can't read any of this. So it's just one big waste of time. We'll take some more calls in a minute. 1-800-941-SEAN is the number, 1-800-941-SEAN. And Ann Coulter will be with us. Larry Kudlow will be here a little later. He's the only one that could actually read these tax returns and know what it says. Hey, welcome back. It's the Sean Hannity Show. Mark Simone here. Sean is in Israel. We got it tonight. You don't want to miss this. Fox News Channel, 10 o'clock tonight. Big special, Sean Hannity, exclusive interview with Israeli Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu. And they will actually take a helicopter ride together over the border, the Israeli-Palestinian border. It'll be a fascinating show, 10 o'clock Eastern time tonight on the Fox News Channel. Let's go to Max in Indian River, Michigan. Hey, Max, how you doing?
I'm doing good. I listened to the show, and I heard you say you'd want somebody that's liberal-leaning, Democratic, supporting to call in to talk about taxes.
Very nice of you. Now, why do you nuts want to see his tax returns? What is in that tax return you want to see?
Well, like I told your screener, who, by the way, was awesome.
Hey, no sexual harassment here.
No, none. She was just awesome.
No, she's a very good producer. That's Lauren.
One of two things. One, he will either show us the taxes, and I will be shown that I'm wrong.
About what?
Believing that he's entangled in places with money interests throughout the world that would not benefit the country. They're only benefiting him.
What in your imagination are you dreaming up he's entangled in?
I'm not imagining anything. I'm saying that he can do two things. One, he can leave it so that people believe that there are entanglements that he's trying to hide. He's lied to the country when he said he can't release his taxes because he's under audit.
Wait. Hold it. You can't just make crazy claims. You cannot release your tax returns when you're under audit. I know if you asked a lawyer, is it technically legal, he would say yes. But if you ask any reputable lawyer, would you allow a client to release taxes under audit, they will say absolutely not. You cannot release them under audit.
I'm not sure about that.
The reason you're not sure about that is you made sure not to ever look into that. But if you ask any lawyer, would you allow a client? You know, this is what MSNBC and CNN do. This is that little trick they pull. They always have the lawyer on, and then they'll say, are you allowed to release a tax return under audit? And the guy will say, yes, you legally can. They never ask the next question. Would you ever let a client do that? And they would say, absolutely not.
I can tell you that I wouldn't get a lawyer if somebody asked me to see my tax returns because I don't have anything to hide.
Yes, you do.
No, I don't.
Yes, you do. We don't know you have financial entanglements, shady kinds of entanglements all over. How do we not know that? You haven't shown your tax returns.
Do you want them? I'll send them to you. I have absolutely no problem with anybody analyzing because I'm honest.
I don't know if you're that honest. I don't know if you're that. You sound like a nice guy, but yeah.
You wanted to know. Let me just ask you something.
Donald Trump has put out a 100-page financial disclosure that's far more detailed about assets, what he owns, what he has, than the tax return would show.
Correct.
But that should tell you everything you need to know. The tax return tells you very little.
Nope, because almost every, other than on Fox, every show that I've seen, and I've watched five or six different networks, I listened to
Okay, but you do realize the tax return doesn't show all his income. The income can come into the companies. The only thing a tax return shows is what he's chosen to pay himself. It's a private company. He can do whatever he wants. All you see on the tax return, it doesn't show charitable contributions. That's done through the foundation tax returns. And it just shows whatever income he chose to pay himself. You see very little in a tax return.
That's your opinion.
No, it's not my opinion. It's true. Let me give you an example. Hey, thanks for calling, Max. Let me give you an example. If you were to look at Warren Buffett's tax return, he's practically the richest man in the world. All the tax return shows is he made $75,000 last year because that's all he pays himself. It's a way of avoiding taxes, but that's all it shows. And it doesn't show any charitable contributions when, in fact, he's made billions in charitable contributions. But again, that would be in the foundation tax returns, not his personal ones. Hey, follow me on Instagram, Mark Simone NY at Instagram. In fact, if you do that now, you'll see some pictures of me and Sean from the other night. Mark Simone, NY, at Instagram, or on Twitter, too. Ann Coulter's going to be with us in a little while. Larry Kudlow coming up. It's Mark Simone here for Sean. Don't forget, watch Hannity tonight, 10 o'clock. Big special interview with Bibi Netanyahu. We'll take some more calls in a minute. 1-800-941-SEAN is the number. Hey, welcome back. Mark Simone here for Sean Hannity. Sean will be back on Monday. But tonight he's going to be on the Fox News Channel. Big show tonight at 10 o'clock. He'll interview Israeli Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu. And not only an exclusive interview, but they're going to take a helicopter ride over the Israeli-Palestinian border. So should be an interesting show tonight at 10 on the Fox News Channel. I just gave out my Instagram and told people to friend me on Instagram. You know, it's interesting. When you do that, I can look at you. You know, it's interesting when you see the audience because all of a sudden you see just like in the last few minutes who signed up on Instagram. And look at that. All ages, nice looking audience. Of course, everybody only puts their best picture on Instagram, but nice looking listeners to this show. Very sharp looking. Let's take some calls. Let's go to Chuck in New York. Hey, Chuck. Chuck?
Hey.
Hey.
Hey. How you doing today?
Let me check. Not bad.
Well, I was just sitting here listening to you, and, you know, it's funny how, you know, we sit here and wonder what's in the president's tax return.
No, we don't. We know exactly what's in him.
No, we don't.
We don't
know what's in there.
Yeah, we do.
I mean, we only know what they tell us.
No, we know.
Which is nothing.
Hey, I guarantee you when you see these tax returns, he made $200 million, he paid $50 million in taxes. Got a lot of real estate deductions, investment inductions. What else would you think is in there?
But who is he tied up with?
That's in the 100-page financial disclosure.
That don't tell us anything.
It tells you everything. It's 100 pages of financial details.
You know, I like to give every president a fair chance. And when
no, you don't. Who are you kidding?
I do. I like his strength. As far as when it comes to wars and stuff,
yeah.
You know, but I want to trust who's in office.
All know? Right. Well, Rachel Maddow had a big tax return and she went over it in vivid detail a couple weeks ago. What was in that?
I mean, basically nothing.
Well, what do you think is in this one?
She got a couple pages of nothing.
Well, what do you think is in this one?
There is a lot more, you know.
Why would there be more in this one than that one?
Let me tell you something. I'm the type of person. If there's information that I'm holding back from people, it's because I have something that I don't want to tell you that is very close to me, and it may not go right.
We've already proven your theory incorrect because he didn't want to release the 2005 one. Somebody smuggled it out, and there was nothing in it except just what you'd expect.
I don't know, man. It just seems like
I think it's good not to release. I think it's important not to release these tax returns just to drive you people nuts. Just to make you liberals crazy.
Hillary Clinton, they released their tax returns, right?
And tell me what was in it.
And we found out that they made a certain amount of money.
What?
And
how much?
And the The Republicans are going crazy over that.
Nobody's even mentioned it. Nobody ever talked about it. Nobody noticed. Nobody cared. Nobody mentioned it.
Of course. I listen to you guys all the time.
Nobody ever talks about it.
On and on about
I just mentioned it 10 minutes ago. That was the first time. Did you also notice in Clinton world, they were all tied up with the Russians. They were getting tens of millions into the Clinton Foundation from Russia. Her campaign manager, Podesta, got a $30 million check from a Russian bank connected to Putin. Did you notice her campaign manager's family got millions last year to be paid Russian agents?
Where are you guys getting this information from?
From them, from the Podesta family. Podesta's brother is registered as a foreign agent. He represented Russia. He got a few million dollars last year. That's on the record.
And we're making a big deal about that, but we can't make a big deal about
it. I don't hear anybody mentioning it. Nobody ever mentions it. Her campaign manager,
with Russia.
Her campaign manager, John Podesta, is because one of the directors of a little Massachusetts company, and somehow last year, one of Vladimir Putin's banks decided to give him $30 million. Is that just a coincidence?
It may not be a coincidence.
All right, but I'm just saying, I don't hear anybody worrying about that. So I wouldn't sweat the Trump tax returns. All you're going to find out is he made a ton of money and paid a lot of taxes.
But as a Democrat, we're going to sweat it, you know, just like how you sweat certain things that the Democrats do, you know.
Did you hear that My Pillow I was talking about?
No.
You might want to get one of those and get a little more rest. You just seem to be stressed out over this. If you can't sleep because you're worrying about these tax returns, try the My Pillow. Maybe that'll help. Let's go to Los Angeles and say hello to Joe. Joe, what's going on out there? Joe?
Hey, Mark.
Couple things.
Just beyond the issue, if Donald Trump releases all his taxes, all the members of Congress and the Senate should release their taxes, fine with me. And how about all the heads of the Democratic Party? But more importantly for me, now's the time we need to remind people that every time we lower taxes for everybody, we get more increased revenues to the government, and we increase economic activity. It always happens. It happened in the roaring 20s, the swinging 60s, the great 80s, and the early 2000s.
Well, that's true. You know, Reagan lowered taxes, it doubled revenue. Bush lowered taxes. He set the all-time record at the time for revenue coming in. But you can't remind Democrats of that because they will not remember it.
We need to have this debate. I keep hearing this stupid thing.
I'm just telling you, with a Democrat, you cannot remind them because 1 second later, they won't remember. You could say it 1,000 times. You could put it on a big billboard right across from their house. You could tattoo it on their forehead. They will not remember it. They'll forget it a second later.
All we need to do is remember that make the spineless Republicans in Congress remember it. And all we need is 51 of them to remember it. You reduce taxes, and we're going to have an economy like you've never seen. It's going to be huge.
Yeah.
For sure. It always happens.
I agree. You're preaching to the choir here. But, again, you cannot – Democrats say 1 second later, they forget it. 800-941-SHAWN is the number, 800-941-SHAWN. Did you hear about the Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young? They're going to reunite. Now, these guys hate each other. They want to kill each other. They can't stand each other. Why would they reunite? It says they hate Donald Trump so much. They hate Donald Trump so much that it's stronger than their hatred for each other. So they're getting back together to record anti-Trump songs. You see, Bruce Springsteen has put out an anti-Trump song. Did you also see that there's this yacht, this zillion-dollar, 10-mile-long yacht that's owned by David Geffen, and it's in the South Pacific right now? On board this yacht is Barack Obama and his wife. They're on this yacht with Oprah Winfrey. Who else is on? Tom Hanks is on there. And it says Bruce Springsteen is on board this yacht. Wait a minute. Isn't he supposed to be broken down on his motorcycle on a highway in New Jersey? I don't hear anything in the songs about being on a $100 million yacht with David Geffen. How come he doesn't sing about that? So he's got an anti-Trump song coming out. You know, Oprah has that friend, that big star chaser, that Gayle King, who's on the CBS Morning Show with Charlie Rose. So it turns out she's on the yacht, and that's kind of embarrassing because she's been posing as a journalist for the last couple of years, pretending she's a journalist on the CBS Morning Show. And even Charlie Rose, who's pretty liberal, they tell me he's very upset. You're not supposed to be on the yacht with President Obama hanging out with him. You're supposed to look objective. Of course, it's a little tougher anybody on that CBS morning show. 800-941-SHAWN is the number. Let's go to Jan in Wisconsin. Hey, Jan, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing well.
And what do you want to say, Jan?
I'm here.
I know, I can tell. What do you want to say?
So I wanted to talk about Donald Trump's taxes. I am really sick and tired of all of these people calling in, talking about the fact that he needs to release his taxes. I don't think, even if he released his taxes, they would even understand how to read those taxes. The mainstream media will take every single tax line and manipulate it and spin it in some undue fashion that he's done this or he's claimed this or he's taken this deduction. And then he'll have a drove of questions.
Yeah, I don't think you even have to worry about that. I really don't think you have to worry about it. It'll be just like it'll be the same as the 2005 tax returns. They couldn't find anything in there. Hey, it's not even worth talking about. The only thing is, and just remember this, whenever you hear them talking about his tax returns, it means he's had the greatest week ever. They cannot find anything to pick on. If there's nothing to attack him for, they're back to the tax returns from last year.
What I have here is a copy of Donald Trump's tax returns. We have his federal tax return for 1 year, for 2005. I believe this is the only set of the president's federal taxes that reporters have ever gotten a hold of. What we have are these two pages, front and back, from the same 1040 form that you might have filled out when you file your taxes. And in terms of what's on here, let me give you the basics. Aside from the numbers being large, these pages are straightforward. He paid $38 million in taxes. He took a big write-down of $103 million. More on that later. If you add up the lines for income, he made more than $150 million in that year. Mazel tov. We got these pages. We got this document today from a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative journalist who's better on financial matters than almost anybody else in the business. His name is David K. Johnston. These pages turned up the other day in his mailbox. David will join us live here in just a moment. But because nobody has had the president's taxes before, we didn't know what to expect. When we showed this 2005 return to the White House to ask him if it's real, we sent this over to the White House tonight, and the White House responded basically with, yep.
Oh, my God. It was riveting television. Whew. You remember, she read these numbers for like 20 minutes about nothing. And then they brought on that special guy, the special investigative journalist. Remember when he came on? It was this schlumpy-looking guy from way upstate New York who bored the hell out of everybody. And this show, it didn't exactly go viral on YouTube. They didn't exactly put it on the shelf in the Museum of Broadcasting. It wasn't exactly great television. Anyway, we'll take some more calls in a minute. 800-941-SHAWN is the number. Ann Coulter will be with us. Larry Kudlow is coming. Hey, welcome back. It's the Sean Hannity Show. It's Mark Simone here for Sean. And be watching tonight. Sean's got a big special on the Fox News Channel. 10 o'clock tonight. Exclusive interview with Israeli Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu. And they will take together a helicopter ride over the Israeli-Palestinian border. That should be interesting. That's tonight at 10 Eastern, Fox News Channel. You know, the world is always changing. Everything's changing. Sometimes that's great and sometimes it's not. So when you walk to the counter in a drugstore, you got all the cash registers, and then behind them they got the cigarettes, the razor blades. But right below them in the drugstore, thousands of candy bars, every kind of candy in the world. So there's tremendous pressure now to stop this. And one of the biggest and best drugstore chains, CVS, they're all over the Northeast, millions of them. So they've now said no more candy up by the cash registers. They'll still sell candy and popcorn and pretzels. They'll still sell all that stuff. But they will no longer put it up in the front by the cash register. That's terrible. That's not right. That's where it belongs. That's where you see that there's now 18 kinds of M&Ms. Or that there's six different kinds of Milky Ways. You ever try to buy M&Ms? It's so confusing now. There's dark chocolate, milk chocolate. There's a birthday cake filled. There's peanut filled. There's almond filled. There's coffee bean filled. It's like a major decision. But what are you going to put up in the front? That's half the fun of waiting in line at the register, looking at all those candy bars.
Which one do you like to get, the M&Ms?
Lately, the dark chocolate, the pretzel filled is very good. That coffee bean one, I don't quite get. I don't understand that one. Yeah, in fact, go online. There's 400 kinds of M&Ms that you don't even know about. You don't see in most stores. But what are they going to put in the front there under those cash registers? It's going to affect business, and it's going to affect these candy companies. And I don't have to go hunt for a candy bar. Things are just changing too fast.
I'm hankering for a good kale bar right now. That's probably what you're going to get.
I don't want to see any kale up there. And where the hell did this kale come from? 3 years ago, nobody ever heard of kale. It's everywhere in everything. Where was it?
It's a bougie way of saying seaweed, I think.
No, it's not seaweed. Seaweed actually has some flavor to it. Well, it does. If you like Japanese restaurants and sushi, no, you don't. But that kale is like bitter, awful. You could see why for
our kale expert is out today. So.
Who's that?
Linda. She's in Israel.
You're
kidding. She could give you all you need to know about some quality kale.
You're kidding. She likes kale? Well, listen, I can tell you it was always around. And in the farming world, when they were picking the lettuce, they said, oh, this tastes good. All right, we'll sell this. And then maybe the arugula, hey, this is okay. But at some point, they must have seen the kale and said, ugh, oh, we can't sell this. So for 1,000 years, they never even tried until this crazy era of eat what's good. Supposedly has more iron, has everything except flavor. But otherwise, it's perfect. Hey, when we come back in the next hour, Larry Kudlow will be with us. Ann Coulter coming up. Got lots to talk about. Follow me on Instagram. It's Mark Simone NY at Instagram. There's a picture of the studio. Many people asking, why do you have 6 computer screens? I don't know. We'll answer that in the next hour. Don't go away. A lot more coming up.
Well, first of all, our condolences from our country to the people of France. Again, it's happening, it seems. I just saw it as I was walking in, so that's a terrible thing. And it's a very, very terrible thing that's going on in the world today. But it looks like another terrorist attack. And what can you say? It just never ends. We have to be strong and we have to be vigilant. And I've been saying it for a long time.
Well, it's just a horrible situation, the attack in Paris. Now, there's a wonderful book, The Post-American Presidency, Obama's War on America and Stop the Islamization of America. It's by Pamela Geller and Robert Spencer, experts in this area and terrorism and these situations. And who do we have on the line now? Pamela Geller?
Yes.
And where's Robert?
I'm sure he's coming.
Oh, we found him. Robert Spencer, you're there too, right?
I am here.
Oh, good. We got both of you there. Paris, this attack, the suspect identified as a 39-year-old. Tell us about him. How did he get in the country? Where did he come from?
He seems to be somebody that was on their radar. As a matter of fact, he had attacked police several years ago and got a 20-year sentence. But he was released early because there's always clemency and mercy for these people that is never reciprocated with gratitude.
Yeah, but with the attacks that have taken place in Paris, you would think they'd be super cautious about everything. How do they allow this to happen?
Well,
you know, it would be Islamophobic to do too much to try to rein this guy in. They have such a restive and aggressive and rapidly growing Muslim population. They're afraid to act because if they do, then they're going to be protests against their acting strongly.
Yeah. Hey, but Pamela, the Paris population, as liberal as they might be, must be saying to themselves, we've got to do something. This is too much.
Well, the timing on this, of course, on the eve of the presidential election, I think, is a nail in the coffin of these presidential candidates like Macron, who says that they have to learn to live with terror. The presidential election is coming down to one critical question. Will the French submit and capitulate to Islamic terror and Sharia supremacism, or will they fight for France? No free society lives with terrorism. Living with terrorism means that they're surrendering. And the idea that France is, since the Charlie Hebdo mass slaughter, there have been close to 250 people killed, more than in the whole century prior, the whole previous century of terrorism. The knee-jerk response always is to blame the victims, blame the targets, whitewash jihad. To me, it's the second wave of the attack. First, you get the violent jihad, then you get the stealth jihad. You get the dawah. You're admonished not to tie the attacks to Islam, even though the jihadi is, declaring for Islam. I mean, this jihadi, Karim, left a note. pledging his support to the Islamic State. And again, the media goes off on these distractions like, was he inspired by the Islamic State or was he what is inspiring the Islamic State?
Yeah, but now explain this presidential election that's taking place. There's a far-left candidate, Pateau, and by the way, President Obama has been working with him. He's been on the phone with him, trying to help him. What is his position? He's somehow blaming Paris for the attack.
Yes, well, that's what the left does. The left has always blamed the West for jihad. It's part of this leftist Islamic alliance, as if sanctioning the terror in the cause, again, of Islam. Now, just as he sided with the anti-Brexit movement in the UK, once again, President Obama is on the wrong side of history. If this if this terrorist attack moves the election in any way, it will certainly move it to Le Pen. And anyone else that is you know, taking a stand against jihad terror, what that means, you know, they talk a lot of talk. What is the policy? Will they stop monitoring the mosques? Will they stop Muslim immigration? Will they deport jihad, you know, terrorists that either are engaged in, waged, or plotting jihad terror?
Hey, we're talking with Pamela Geller. Robert Spencer, the other candidate, they describe him. This is what they do here. They describe him as anti-immigration. He's not anti-immigration, correct? He's just not vetting people carefully.
Yeah, and this is always what they do when the establishment media is reporting on somebody like Le Pen or Fillon or Donald Trump in the United States. They try to portray the positions that they're taking in this most negative light possible. Obviously, the whole problem with immigration is only a problem with jihadis coming in among the migrant stream and Sharia supremacists coming in among the migrant stream who want to replace the laws of France or the laws of the United States with the laws of Islam, and who are going to do violence in the pursuit of that end or work through subversive means in pursuit of that end. That's the only reason why anybody is worried about immigration. But they try to portray it as if this is a racist, bigoted, xenophobic action instead of what they ought to be doing, saying this is a candidate who's raising issues about national security in relation to immigration that need to be addressed, and challenging the leftist candidates about how they propose to protect the French people. But they never do that, of course, because they're not on our side.
Now, what's the situation in France? Are there so many undocumented or unvetted people that have come in that it's almost hopeless now trying to find terrorists hidden throughout this country?
Oh, yeah. There's such a large population of Muslims in Paris in particular, but all over France. And we saw it with the attackers in November 2015 who killed 130 people in Paris. They melted back into the Muslim population in France. They moved back over to Belgium and were protected there in Molenbeek, the notorious Muslim neighborhood of Antwerp, for months. And everybody knew they were there, but nobody said a word to authorities. And this kind of thing makes it worse and worse, more difficult all the time to track down these people.
Well, and how good are the French law enforcement and investigators, if they really did want to crack down, at finding the trouble in the population?
I think they've been overwhelmed. Their terror list, and this is now 6 months old, their terror list is over 10,000 suspects that they are monitoring. At some point, it's not a question of good. It's a question of quantity and number. There's a complete freedom of movement, part of the EU's destructive policies, immigration policies. And so you see even the jihadi that opened fire on the police and killed a police officer, tragically and ironically, the dead officer was a first responder at Bataclan. I mean, you know, it's touched every life repeatedly.
Now,
and so he came from Belgium.
Okay, now
they travel, as Robert said, they travel from country to country. They have these Muslim no-go neighborhoods, these no-go zones that are protected. They protect the jihadis. He was on the fly for weeks. They couldn't find him. He was protected. So this idea that it's one guy and it's fringe and it's, you know, it's a lone wolf. There are no lone wolves in the global jihad.
Now, this is France. It's a desperate, dangerous situation there. What about the rest of Europe? What if Germany's got the same problem? Sweden? Where else?
The whole of the continent. I mean, there literally was an invasion, a migration to into Europe, and anyone that opposed it was a racist, Islamophobic, anti-Muslim bigot, if you recall. You could not oppose the overwhelming male, military age fit. I mean, yes, the media would find a photo of a child and who, that would be strategically placed on a beach, deliberately moved, again, manipulation, propaganda to support this invasion of Europe. But for those of us like Robert Spencer and myself, whose websites are devoted to jihad terror and Sharia, every day we can't keep up.
Well,
with the thwarted attacks, with the attacks, with what's going on in Sweden, the rape capital of the world, Germany, and this is really Merkel's doing because she was the power. She's the power. They have the money. They're the engine behind the EU.
Well,
and I predict that the EU is going to fall,
right,
particularly if Le Pen or Fillon are elected.
I wish we had more time. It's great talking to you guys. Pamela Geller, Robert Spencer. What's your website that people should go to?
GellerReport.com and JihadWatch.com.
And
.org.
Yeah, and get their book, The Post-American Presidency, President Obama's War on America, and Stop the Islamization of America. Great talking to you. Thanks for being with us. Hey, we'll take some calls in a minute. 800-941-SEAN is the number. Hey, welcome back. It's the Sean Hannity Show. This is Mark Simone here for Sean. He's in Israel today. He'll be back on Monday. But tonight, he's doing a big special from Israel. It'll be tonight, 10 o'clock Eastern on the Fox News Channel. Sean Hannity exclusive interview with Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu, and they'll take a helicopter ride on the show. They'll take a helicopter ride over the Israeli-Palestinian border. Big show tonight, 10 o'clock Eastern on the Fox News Channel. Let's take some calls. Let's go to Madeline in Michigan. Hey, Madeline, welcome to the Sean Hannity Show.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
I just want to say that we the people voted in Donald Trump, not movie stars, not rock stars. We the people, and I'm still waiting for the movie stars to leave the U.S. and go to Canada.
Yeah, there's a list of a couple hundred that promised they would go. A lot of people have offered to pay for the tickets. They just won't go. There's no getting rid of them.
I don't go to the movies. I don't buy magazines. I don't support them in no way, never.
And where are you going right now? It sounds like you're driving somewhere.
On my way home from work.
Well, you get out kind of early, don't you?
Well, I work in education. I get off at 3:30.
You're a teacher?
No, I'm a special ed, a teacher's assistant.
Oh, okay. Hey, most of those teachers, pretty liberal, aren't they?
Oh, they're awful, but a lot of them voted for Trump.
Oh, that's
interesting. I was pretty shocked.
Well, Michigan is one of the states that turned things around. You guys did your part there. Hey, Madeline, thanks a lot for calling. Let's go to Phil, Sugar Hill, New Hampshire. Hey, Phil.
Hey, Mark, it's Phil. Thank you for covering the show. I love it when you cover it.
Sugar Hill, that's right across the river from Franconia, right?
Jumping Jiminy, it's 1.3 miles up the hill from Franconia.
There you go. You see, and only in New Hampshire would they say Jumping Jiminy. I'm going to walk out of this building at the end of the show, right there on Fifth Avenue, and I'm going to say to a New Yorker, Jumping Jiminy.
And watch also, don't forget to say Wicked.
Wicked. I love New Hampshire. It's beautiful up there.
It's a little drizzly and cool and gray right now, but I think you guys have the same.
Yeah.
But listen, I just to be sure Hannity sleeps properly tonight, aside from having his MyPillow, of course. You need to, you know, whoop Congress just a little bit to, you know, stand behind our president. And aside from that.
Yeah, I'm not a big believer in this Paul Ryan anymore as far as getting things done, as far as accomplishing
a lot.
It's
making me nervous. You know,
yeah, he makes everybody nervous.
I wonder about the market, and I do have a few things there, and I'm wondering if it, you know, it's like, so when's the time?
Well, Larry Kudlow's coming up in a few minutes. We'll ask him about the market. It's been way up since the election of Donald Trump, and usually that means a correction is coming, but we'll see.
It's done well, but can I say just a couple things real quick?
Yeah.
Mac, from earlier in the show, you got schooled, but you're Democrat, so you don't even know it. Madeline, I love you. She was great.
Yeah.
And to be allowed to speak on a show right before Ann Coulter, died and gone to heaven.
Well, you're talking to like 15 million people right now.
Oh, my God. She's a warrior. And I cannot wait to to see her take them on. I mean, she is right up to it, and they don't even know it.
All right, well, she'll be with us in a few minutes. Phil, thanks for calling. Yeah, we're going to talk to Larry Kudlow in a minute, and then Ann Coulter will be coming up at the top of the hour. We'll find out the latest on Berkeley. It was off. It's on. It's off. I think it's on now. She's got an attorney's looking into things. So we'll get to all of that coming up. Let's go to Percy in Los Angeles. Hey, Percy.
Good afternoon. Mark, I've got some questions. You know, I've got a lot of friends, a huge Trump supporter, always have been, but I'm starting to not recognize Donald Trump anymore. I mean, it seems like every day he's a little bit light on Iran. He's, you know, talking to, you know, about the Saudis being our friends, the Wahhabists, and not hearing much about the wall. And I know I'm not alone. I know there's a lot of.
Oh, I know, but don't worry. Listen, he's been a friend of mine for.
I am worried.
25 years.
Be worried.
I've watched him do this. I've watched him negotiate. It's the way he works. He's on your side. He's against you. He's for you. He loves you. He hates you. He does this. It's a negotiating tactic. And it's like, you know, in the police, the detectives call you in and they do the good cop, bad cop routine on you. He does it single-handedly. He does his own good cop, bad cop, and it's more just to confuse the opponent. They don't quite know where they stand. He just kind of plays you like a yo-yo a little. But in the end, he always, always gets it done. And now that's what he does sometimes. And then in some negotiations, he comes on way too strong, like he's going to shake everything up. It's just it's a tactic that's worked for him brilliantly. So, and sometimes you'll hear him say something like tariffs and this and that, and you'll get all alarmed. You say, well, that's too much, and that's going to cause. Don't worry, he's a negotiator. These are just opening bids. And in each negotiation, he knows how to play the situation. But in the end, he always, always gets things done. So don't worry. I know. You're going to pan with. Larry Kudlow will be with us in a moment. He's been an unofficial advisor to Donald Trump. He's got a great book out that we'll talk about. And, of course, you see him on CNBC. Hey, and follow me on Twitter. It's Mark Simone NY at Twitter. A lot of good stuff up there. Mark Simone NY at Twitter. Larry Kudlow coming up, and then we'll find out exactly what's going on with Ann Coulter. She'll be with us at the top of the hour. Mark Simone here for Sean Hannity.
Some people on Capitol Hill believe you can get one of two things next week, a vote on health care or a vote on a government funding bill. So my question is, which one is more important to you to have, a vote on health care or a vote on a bill to keep the government open?
Okay, I want to get both. Are you shocked to hear that? And we're doing very well on health care. We'll see what happens. But this is a great bill. There's a great plan. And this will be great health care. It's evolving. You know, there was never a give up. The press sort of reported there was like a give up. There's no give up. We started. Remember, it took Obamacare 17 months. I've really been negotiating this for 2 months, maybe even less than that, because we had a 30-day period where we did lots of other things the first 30 days. But this has really been 2 months. And this is a continuation. And the plan gets better and better and better. And it's gotten really, really good. And a lot of people are liking it a lot. We have a good chance of getting it soon. I'd like to say next week, but it will be, I believe we will get it. And whether it's next week or shortly thereafter, as far as keeping the government open, I think we want to keep the government open. Don't you agree? So, yeah, I think we'll get both.
Hey, let's turn now. It's Mark Simone, by the way, for Sean Hannity. Sean will be back Monday. Let's turn to the smartest guy around, Larry Kudlow. Of course, you see him on CNBC. Hey, by the way, he's written a very important book you should read. It's called JFK and the Reagan Revolution. Now, this will take you through these tax cuts and how JFK used them effectively, how Reagan used them. Very important book to read right now by Larry Kudlow. Larry, how you doing?
Good, Mark. Thanks very much.
Now, you were also, of course, in the Reagan administration. And when you first all got to Washington in those first 100 days, what was it like as far as trying to get everything done? It must have been overwhelming in the very beginning.
Well, you know, looking back to it, there were like a couple of major, major priorities. You know, not six, not eight, really, not, in some sense, not even three. There were two. One was Reagan had a very bold, across-the-board tax cut. Lower marginal tax rates, individuals, corporations, capital gains, whatever. And the second one was to start building up our defense, because he was sending strong signals to the old Soviet Union that he didn't want to do business with them. He wanted to overthrow them. And he felt, you know, peace through strength. We've got to build up our own forces, which had come to disarray. And to be honest with you, there were other things going on. You know, there were funding bills and so forth. But when we wrote our own budget, those were the two major priorities, military spending and the lower marginal tax rates to reignite the economy.
And when exactly did you get the tax rates done?
The tax rates were, I think, finished in Congress in July of 81.
Wow.
And if I can recall properly, the president signed the bill, I think in Camp David, in August. It was early to mid-August of 1981.
Wow.
So, you know, the whole push, I mean, Mark, in those days, the Republicans had the Senate, although a third of the Republican Party opposed Reagan's supply-side tax cuts. So we had to convince the others. But the Democrats had the House. That was the Tip O'Neill House. And Reagan worked tirelessly to get 75 Democratic votes in the House in order to pass his bill. It was quite remarkable.
Well, but it was a simpler time. Had you been burdened with this ridiculous Obamacare, you guys might have had to do something about that right away.
Well, perhaps so. But, you know, the way it was done, the big issue then was Social Security. And the numbers, the projections, you know, for whatever they're worth, showed that we were entering a danger period of bankruptcy for Social Security. So what Reagan did was he appointed a bipartisan commission, Alan Greenspan, Republican, Daniel Patrick Moynihan, Democrat, I believe Lane Kirkland from the unions, a Democrat. Anyway, I think, Mark, that was started in late 82, but I know it was completed by about the spring of 83, and it made a number of changes which have kept Social Security solvent, you know, right up to this day. So we kind of waited on the entitlements. The first priority, get tax rates down because we had no economic growth, make the dollar stronger. Reagan worked with Paul Volcker to get the inflation rate down, and build up DOD spending. Those were the major priorities right away. And guess what? He got them.
Yeah. But healthcare is strangling a lot of businesses. What do you think can happen? Do you think there'll be an attempt to get this done very fast?
I do. I mean, I'm interested to see. Now, they're publishing the committee print. I don't think it's out yet, but we know a lot about it. And a lot of compromises are being made. They're pretty good compromises, mostly around state rights, you know, federalism. And the compromises, essential benefits mandate would be up to the states. Risk pool for the sick would be up to the states. People with prior illnesses would be put into the states. Medicaid would be put into the states. Now, I've also heard, and I can't confirm this 100%, but I've also heard that the Conservative Freedom Caucus in the House has been negotiating with some Senate members, to be specific, that Mark Meadows from North Carolina, I believe, is negotiating with Senator Susan Collins in Maine. She's more of a moderate.
Yeah.
So I think that, I think that's hopeful. I don't want to predict, because you can't predict this stuff. It blew up the last time. But it looks like they're making pretty good deals. So we'll see. It's going to happen fast, yes or no, up or down.
Yeah, I don't have a lot of confidence in Paul Ryan as far as getting things done.
Well, you know, without passing judgment on Paul Ryan, who was an old friend of mine going back many, many years, I think what you're getting here is an opening. You know, when the House first put its bill on the table, and it was a bill that was okay as a first step, but it had some serious loopholes. It had some serious problems. They didn't really include the conservatives. And, in fact, I guess they didn't include some moderates, but the conservatives have heavier weights. And I never understood that. That was a mistake John Boehner made. And, again, Boehner's a friend of mine. He's a great man, but he made that mistake, tried to freeze out the different factions. You can't do that, Mark.
Yeah.
So what gives me a little hope, I don't want to sound too bullish on this, but now you've got the conservatives negotiating with the moderates in both the House and the Senate. Ryan is not running the show, with handcuffs. And we'll see. We'll see. Next week will be very interesting, or the week after.
And, you always point out Reagan didn't go try to get everything. What did he used to say? Let me go get half now.
Right. Depending on which conversation it was. Sometimes he'd say, give me half a loaf, and I'll get the other half later. And sometimes he'd say, give me 70%. And we're still friends that I can get the other 30% later. The point is, Reagan was a deal maker. I mean, he ran a union, Screen Actors Guild. He was president five terms, if I'm not mistaken. So let's say our tax cut plan, we didn't get everything we wanted, and we didn't get it as fast as we wanted. It was spread out over 3 years. I think in economic terms that was not good, but that's what you needed politically. But he did it. You're right. He was willing to make progress and keep going along. Now, that's what did not happen with the first health care pass.
Yeah.
And secondly, we'll see about tax reform. We'll see.
Well, they may have relied a little too much on Paul Ryan. Trump knows, he's smart enough as a negotiator to know what you're saying. Maybe he'll take more of the lead in this next round.
Well, I think so. I mean, the other thing, look, the economy is still very, very lackluster. And you're growing at 2% or less. First quarter, probably come in around 1%. And you really need, this is the piece a bunch of us wrote in the New York Times yesterday or the day before. You really need to get these large and small business tax cuts on the table, Mark. And bring home the foreign cash. A new investment can be expensed immediately. That, I think, would be the single biggest trigger for faster economic growth. And I mean, it could happen just as soon as the bill is signed. And so we are suggesting that they break off the business tax cuts from the overall bill, separate them out from the individual. We can go after the individual. Needs a lot of reform, simplicity, lower rates, and so forth. But it's also expensive. I'm not sure it has as much bang for the buck on growth. But go for the business, again, large and small. And you'll get this economy moving at 3%. And this is my favorite point. If you take 3% growth, you will get the mother of all pay-fors. You will raise about $4 trillion over 10 years above the CBO baseline.
Hmm.
So the CBO is saying 1.8% growth. Okay, we can't do any better now. Of course we can. If you move the needle to 3% growth, the economy expands, incomes expands, more people working, pay more taxes. 80% of the American workforce works for a large or small company. And you get about $4 trillion in extra revenues. So you don't need border taxes. You don't need any VAT taxes. You don't need carbon taxes. Just focus on what's in front of you, and you don't necessarily need everything at once.
Yeah. Can you name any case in history where the CBO projection was actually correct?
No. Including, by the way, recent history. They scored the Obama spending stimulus. It was about $850-900 billion. They scored that as promoting 3-5% economic growth over the first 3 or 4 years. And of course it never came in that way. It was like 1-2%. So we tried this experiment in government spending. The CBO loves government spending. Now we're trying to go back to tax cuts, which haven't really been tried in several decades. As you pointed out, JFK used them effectively, Reagan used them effectively. Why not try it? And the CBO is blocking it. Because they always say tax cuts lose revenues and the deficit grows. Well, my response is not true. The economy grows with new incentives, working, saving, investing. And as I say, you could reap as much as $4 trillion with better growth. That's the key to everything. And I'm optimistic on that. Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin is now talking about dynamic scoring for economic growth. He said it several times in the past week, and in fact, so has Gary Cohn. So it looks like the White House has kind of taken our cue on this. Growth solves all these problems.
Well, it's great talking to you. And if anybody wants to really understand all of this, get Larry Kudlow's book, big bestseller, JFK and the Reagan Revolution. It's a secret history of, it'll take you through all these tax cuts and how they work and what they've done in the past. Must reading, JFK and the Reagan Revolution. Larry Kudlow, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Mark, as always.
All right. Take care. Now, we'll get to Ann Coulter a little later on in the program. We'll see what's going on. Berkeley, is she speaking, not speaking? We'll get to all that. Take some calls in a minute. 1-800-941-SEAN is the number. It's Mark Simone here for... Hey, welcome back. It's the Sean Hannity Show. It's Mark Simone here for Sean. He'll be back on Monday, but tonight, he's actually in Israel right now. Tonight, he's doing a big special on the Fox News Channel. 10 o'clock tonight on Hannity. Exclusive interview with Israeli Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu. And as part of the show, they'll take a helicopter ride over the Israeli-Palestinian border. Should be a fascinating show tonight at 10 o'clock Eastern on the Fox News Channel. Let's take some calls. Let's go to Jim in Georgia. Hey, Jim, how you doing?
Okay, Mark. How come I don't hear any more talk about replacing the personal income tax with a national sales tax? It would be fair because it's based on consumption, and you could still keep the corporate tax the way it is.
And I don't know. They have that in Europe, you know, that VAT tax. It's just as annoying as the personal income tax. But you gotta lower the tax rates, and you don't need to have a. We already have a state sales tax, a national sales tax. It'd just be too much. Let's just say everybody paid 17%. Wouldn't that be the fairest thing?
I don't know.
Yeah.
If you had a national sales tax, whatever the rate would be would have to be adjusted so that the government would still make the same amount of money.
But once you start adjusting rates, it's going to get as complicated as everything else. You know, there's another thing you got to think about. These futurists and these tech guys that study everything say at some point the government is going to try to eliminate money. You know, they got Apple Pay and your iPhone, and you just hold it up and it pays. Well, at some point, when they get that technology really perfected, they're going to want everybody to pay digitally. You'll just hold your phone up, and it'll read the code, and you'll pay. And at some point, they will actually, according to some futurists, the government will stop manufacturing money. There will be no more money accepted, no more cash. Now, part of the reason for that is they will then have the most detailed record of everything you've bought. Every transaction will be recorded by the government. So, and it's already starting to head in that direction. How many times you're in line at Starbucks, it's been this idiot is holding their phone up and they can't quite read it right and they're moving it around. But at some point, think about that. If there's no more money, no more cash, it would eliminate a lot of crime because everything is on the record then. But, I don't know, you want the government having a record of every single thing you buy? Hey, coming up in the next hour, Ann Coulter will be with us. This will be interesting. There's a fight going on between her and Berkeley. They're trying to silence her. Free speech doesn't seem to be important to the University of California at Berkeley. I think she's back on speaking. We'll get all the latest. We'll get the story directly from the horse's mouth coming up in the next hour. Ann Coulter will be with us. Hey, make sure you follow me on Instagram. It's Mark Simone, NY at Instagram. In fact, there's some pictures of me and Sean there. Mark Simone, NY at Instagram. And Mark Simone, NY at Twitter. A lot of good stuff up there. Don't forget Hannity tonight, 10 o'clock. Big special with Bibi Netanyahu. We'll be back with Ann Coulter in the next hour.
It's also kind of all we have. So show us your f***ing taxes, you emotional child. You like being a superficial bully? Here's one for you. You are a 3 at best. Thank you.
Yes! Have even tried to convince us that we're not really interested in seeing the documents. Do you want to see his taxes? Yes!
Since you guys are my supporters, I'm going to share with you what's on my taxes, because this is between us, okay? Don't let the protesters know what I'm going to tell you. So what? I owe $50 million to Deutsche Bank? Who cares? That's publicly known. But what you don't know is I know where all the Nazi gold is hidden in Switzerland. And I have it. And I have it. I have it. I have it. So wonderful. So let's release them, boys. Release the taxes. There we go. There we go. Releasing the taxes. I told Jared to shred my taxes. But I thought shred was Yiddish for kole.
To be a joke, I cannot believe this is happening. I'm literally about to f-ing kill myself, and I'm not kidding. You better f-ing fix this sh- right now. I literally am gonna die. I need an ambulance.
Oh my God, these liberals, these Democrats, this is like a 2-3 month meltdown, nervous breakdown. Hey, let's, we got a great guest. By the way, Ann Coulter will be here at the bottom of the hour. We'll get the story about what's going on in Berkeley from her. It's Mark Simone here for Sean Hannity. Sean will be back on Monday, but he's doing a big special. He's in Israel right now, and tonight at 10 o'clock on the Fox News Channel, he'll be doing a show, exclusive interview with Bibi Netanyahu, Israeli Prime Minister. In fact, they'll actually take a helicopter ride down to the border. Fascinating show tonight at 10 Eastern on the Fox News Channel. Hey, Chris Hahn is with us. He's the host of the Chris Hahn Show. Now, who else would you get to host the Chris Hahn Show? But Chris Hahn, he's a Democratic strategist, does a great job there. Chris Hahn, how you doing?
I'm doing great. It was tough. You know, I had to pass the audition, and I was fortunately the best Chris Hahn for the Chris Hahn Show.
Well, it's a great show. Now, let me ask you about the liberals, the Democrats. What the hell is wrong with you people?
You know, it's funny, Mark. Like 8 years ago, I think you and I had the same exact conversation, except for I was asking, what is up with these Tea Party people, the people wearing tea bags on their hats? What's wrong with them? This is crazy.
Well, wait.
What does this mean?
The difference was, if you were like a comedian, like you're Jay Leno or whoever, you do the monologue, and somewhere in the monologue there were 3 or 4 Obama jokes, and that was it. You watch this Colbert, the whole monologue is Trump hatred. Then he sits at the desk and does 20 minutes of Trump hatred. Then he brings on a guest who hates Trump. It's like the whole show is like a one-hour primal scream.
Well, there aren't a whole lot of people in the entertainment world that like President Trump.
Oh, no, there are. There are.
Ooh.
Oh, you've got them so terrified they're hiding.
You can't have Ted Nugent on every night.
No, but you got a lot of them. You got tons of them. They're afraid.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look. I mean, it's a time right now where I think the American people are very concerned about the competency of the administration.
No, they're not.
They sure are. I mean,
no, they're not.
Every poll, even Rasmussen has a hard time hiding it. So,
hey, Rasmussen. You remember 29% approval rating plastered all over every newspaper in the world? I noticed the other day he went over 50%. I can't find the story anywhere. Nobody will print it.
That's because nobody believes Rasmussen's polls because they're fake.
Oh, when it was 29%, it was definite. Now this, hey.
Just saying.
Okay, listen. He goes, we had this woman, this American woman, charity worker, imprisoned unlawfully in Egypt. Nobody could get her out for years. Trump starts negotiating, gets the woman released. If this was Obama, every network would break in live to show the plane landing and her getting out and back in America. Where's the coverage?
Well, you know, the funny thing is the Trump administration did two things this week that I'm happy about. One was this test case in Arizona where now veterans can go to CVS. And the other is this woman being released in Egypt. Both, though, were done by people who were holdovers from the Obama administration leading the charge. Now, I'm happy that the president worked on this, and I give him credit for it.
Well, we know in the 3 years of working on it, the Obama administration could not get it done.
But remember, the Trump administration still hasn't even appointed a deputy secretary of state. These were professional ambassadors and people who held over from the Obama administration.
But remember, President Trump spoke directly to the Egyptian president and got this thing going.
President Trump, to his credit, took the advice of those professional ambassadors and talked to the Egyptian president and did get it done. So I'll give
I can picture this. The saying, here's what you say, Mr. Trump. Oh, okay. Should I just say it like this? He's the greatest negotiator in the world. I think the reason it didn't get done in 3 years.
He's the greatest negotiator in the world. I'm looking at that Obamacare replacement bill that he tried to negotiate a couple weeks ago. It didn't go so well, did it?
No, I think, and as we've been saying, I blame that all on Paul Ryan. And as I said in the last segment, I think this time you'll see Donald Trump lead the charge. No more Paul Ryan.
Well, let's see what happens there. You know what? You and I will have plenty to talk about, but I don't think we'll be talking about that passing.
Explain to the normal people out there how this is a good strategy for Democrats to come back, to act like they're having a nervous breakdown, to act completely hysterical day and night, 24/7, everywhere. How's this helping?
Mark, I've been coming on the Sean Hannity show for 10 years.
I don't mean you. I mean the New York Times, the Washington Post, The View, everything.
I am a Democrat, a progressive, who goes on Fox News. I recall being there 8 years ago and the hysteria over Obama. Was he an American? You know, that whole thing.
Okay, boy, that's a good example. That birth certificate stuff might have been a little crazy. But you would see that in the paper once.
A little crazy?
Well, okay, but wait. You'd see that.
Wait, Mark. One more thing, though. One point, though. We just learned yesterday that Jeff Sessions doesn't agree that Hawaii is part of the United States. So maybe that's where it came from.
Oh, no, but you would see that birth certificate stuff maybe once or twice a week somewhere. This crazy Trump stuff, Steve Bannon stories, it's 50 stories a day in the Washington Post, the New York Times. It's everywhere. Never lets up.
Well, you know how the Trump administration could get over that? They could actually start accomplishing things in the best interest of the American people. If they did that, you wouldn't have all this palace intrigue talk.
Well, if they did accomplish something, you'd never read about it, like getting rid of this, getting this Egyptian woman freed, or there's been a lot of things accomplished.
But part of the problem here, Mark, is there's a lot of people within the White House, within the president's inner circle, who are talking to the press and pointing fingers at each other. It might be part of the president's management style to play people off each other, fight for, you know, a higher position in his administration or higher status within his inner circle. So, you know, a lot of that could go right back to President Trump himself. And that's why you're seeing a lot of these palace intrigue stories.
Well, I think it's also, if you're the New York Times, Lester Holt, Washington Post, all this biased media, you will run 5 million stories on Steve Bannon as if is worrying about Steve Bannon.
But when 21 people from within the Oval Office staff are talking to the New York Times and the Washington Post about how Steve Bannon is on the outs, well, you know, it's something that a reporter is going to write, right?
Only because they want to hurt Trump, and they live in the bubble. They're so deep in the bubble, they don't know. There's no one in America wondering about Steve Bannon.
I don't know that they want to hurt Trump. I think that I think there's a lot of people out there who heard things Trump said on the campaign trail.
Like what?
That were very, you know, maybe even somewhat progressive, like transportation infrastructure improvements, not being, you know, a certain way on certain things, you know. And now they see Steve Bannon kind of pushing him really to the far right. And I think people want to help Steve Bannon get kicked right out the door. And I think that's going to happen sooner rather than later.
I don't think Steve Bannon could be described as far right. He's certainly for the working man. He's not an anti-Semite. In fact, he's been just the opposite all his life.
I used to read Breitbart.com in preparation for some of these interviews. And, you know, anti-Semitic.
There's never been an anti-Semitic thing. There's never been an anti-Semitic thing ever in Breitbart. First of all, everybody that works at Breitbart is Jewish. It's run by an Orthodox Jew. Can I take you back to 2014, the Vatican conference where all the greatest speakers in the world spoke? The speech that stole the show was Bannon's speech. It was a plea against anti-Semitism.
Yeah, there were headlines about, I'm dropping the name of the particular
Renegade Jew. Is that the headline you're talking about?
Right, Renegade Jew.
Okay, but you always forget to point out it was by a Jewish writer who was attacking another Jewish writer for not being. Wait. I know it's desperately important for you to cut me off here. It was a Jewish writer attacking another Jewish writer for not being pro-Israel enough. It was the opposite of an anti-Semitic headline.
Well, you know, as the grandson of a Holocaust survivor, I'm always a little concerned when somebody refers to somebody as a renegade Jew.
But you're not concerned that somebody was being anti-Israel, and this guy, the writer of that headline was David Horowitz, by the way, who was attacking the other Jewish writer for not being pro-Israel. You know, they say in Israel, Breitbart is the most pro-Israel site in the world, even more so than the Jerusalem Post. So why make up this anti-Semitic? It's the most ridiculous thing in the world.
Yeah, well, you know, that rag was not taken seriously until President Trump took him seriously. And the minute he kicks Bannon to the curb, it won't be taken seriously again.
Well, it's not the prestigious publication like the Huffington Post, which, of course, we must take very seriously. It's pretty good, that Breitbart.
I read 4 or 5 papers a day, okay? I read the Wall Street Journal. I read the New York Times. I read Newsday because I live on Long Island.
I like Newsday. It's pretty good.
It's a good paper.
I love when they have best hot dog in Long Island and the best sushi.
I can never find those hot dogs, though. You know, that's the thing. You know, that's why I read it.
Yeah.
But it is what it is. And the website I like to trust is Politico. That's the one I go to for my real news about what's going on politically.
Hey, Chris Hahn, you must be a great guest because I didn't realize what time it is. I just had a yell in my ear. Hey, we're out of time. So it flew by. Everybody listen to the Chris Hahn Show. What's your website?
ChristopherHahn.com, and you can find me on Twitter at Christopher Hahn. Thanks for having me.
All right, check it out. Hey, and Ann Coulter will be with us at the bottom of the hour. That'll be pretty good. It's Mark Simone here for Sean. Hey, it's Mark Simone here for Sean Hannity. Sean will be back on Monday, but he's in Israel right now, and then tonight he's doing a big special Fox News Channel, 10 o'clock Eastern, exclusive interview with Bibi Netanyahu, and together they'll take a helicopter ride down to the Israeli-Palestinian border, so don't miss this special tonight at 10 o'clock on the Fox News Channel. Is it 100 days yet for Donald Trump? It's close to it. It's just about 100 days. Next week is the 100 days. Now, you know what that means. That means the traditional honeymoon period is over, and the press might start getting negative about him. So I'm just preparing you for that. They might start writing negative articles after the traditional honeymoon period is over. You see this article, all these articles. How could he have Ted Nugent and Kid Rock in the White House? What kind of thing is this for a president? Let him in the Oval Office. You see who President Obama had in the Oval Office? Every crazy rap star, this was wonderful. But Ted Nugent, you can't do it. They make up these articles. You see the one about after the meeting and the dinner with the president of China, all these articles. How did Ivanka Trump get trademarks for her jewelry in China? What did this have to do with the Chinese president? And that company that she runs and every jewelry company, they get 100 trademarks a month all the time everywhere. It's the most normal thing in the world. To get a trademark, all you got to do is get a trademark attorney, file the form, some bureaucrat checks. If nobody else has a trademark on it, you get the trademark. It's not even anything to debate. I mean, that's all they do. It's like a patent. They check to see if anybody else has a patent on this. If it's brand new and no one else has it, you get the patent. What do you think they do with a trademark? Send it to the president of the country and they have a meeting to decide, should you get it? Should you not get it? It's automatic as long as no one else is holding a trademark. So you see these articles. How did she get two trademarks after meeting with the president of China? They never point out that she's gotten 560 trademarks before the meeting with the president of China. Do we have time to take a call? Real fast. Let's go to Patty, Ventura, California. Hey, Patty. Patty, we only got a few seconds. Oh, did she hang up? She just hung up. How do you like that? We don't even have time to take a call. I go out of my way, and she hangs. No, she probably got cut off. But we got a lot coming up. Ann Coulter, Berkeley. Now, this is crazy. For any college to deny free speech, that's the whole idea of going to college, to learn all different things, different points of view, hear different speakers. How could they deny somebody the right to speak if they have an opposing point of view? Wouldn't that be the first person you'd want to book? What's the latest on that? We'll get to Ann Coulter. She'll be with us next, and we'll find out all about that. Hey, follow me on Twitter, Mark Simone NY at Twitter. It's Mark Simone NY at Instagram, or you can just go to my website, MarkSimone.com, and sign up for everything there. Now, don't forget, tonight at 10, a special Hannity, tonight at 10, exclusive interview, Bibi Netanyahu. It's 10 o'clock Eastern on the Fox News Channel. Don't go away. We'll talk to Ann Coulter. That's coming up next. Hey, welcome back. It's Mark Simone here for Sean. Sean's in Israel right now, and he's got a big special program tonight at 10 o'clock on the Fox News Channel, an exclusive interview with the Israeli Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu. And then together they're going to take a helicopter ride on the show over the Israeli-Palestinian border. And it's tonight, 10 Eastern, Fox News Channel. With us right now, Ann Coulter. Have you read her book, In Trump We Trust? This is the book on Trump. And, of course, go to her website, anncoulter.com. You can get her column. You can get everything there. And you've been reading about this. She was going to speak at Berkeley. Then she's not speaking at Berkeley. Then she is. Then she isn't. It's been a whole battle. And she's on the line now. Ann Coulter, how you doing?
Fantastic. How are you, Mark Simone?
Very good. Wouldn't it be better if you didn't speak at Berkeley? If they just had one point of view and that's it, it makes life simpler. It's confusing people with different sides of an issue. That's too much.
I know it's true, and I think that the Berkeley administrators are just smarter than James Madison was, and he forgot to include an asterisk: free speech, unless it's speech the state doesn't like.
Well, you know, you're laughing, but this one side, they made this work in the Soviet Union for many years. It's worked well in Cuba. You're laughing, but communist China?
No, it's true. And now our lawyer submitted a letter today running through all of their violations of the First Amendment just so far. And that's before I show up on Thursday and get arrested. But just so far, their First Amendment violations, saying that we'll go to court on Monday to demand injunctive relief if they don't find a place to schedule my talk on Thursday. Well, right before I called in to you, we got the letter back from Berkeley.
Oh.
And apparently this is something that cannot be done.
What?
Look, it's one thing to you know, send, do, arrange rockets into outer space to be beneath the sea, but on Berkeley campus, it is impossible to schedule a room for a 90-minute lecture.
Wow. Now, this University of Berkeley, do they receive government funding? Don't they?
Oh, boy, they sure do. Lots from the federal government. And, of course, this is the University of California. This is a public institution. I mean, even a private college receives boatloads and boatloads of federal aid, not only through the students, which counts as that allows the federal government to pull strings. But University of California gets so much money from research grants, and it actually is a state institution. So you could not have a clearer case of a First Amendment violation. And needless to say, the First Amendment has been well litigated over the past 200 years, and these are all just blinding principles of First Amendment law. For example, you cannot, Vicente Fox, the corrupt former president of Mexico, who's constantly cursing at the president of the United States and denouncing him. He spoke earlier this week at Berkeley. He got a room. He wasn't asked to reschedule and have his entire retinue, you know, rebook flights. They managed to find a room for him and provide a safe environment. My speech is actually the follow-up to, and it isn't just the College Republicans, I forget the name of the other. There's a nonpartisan group that was spearheaded inviting me. I think they were embarrassed about what happened to Milo. And so, you know, in the spirit of debate, they had a pro-mass immigration speaker last week, former, I think, Obama official, maybe Clinton official. And then I was supposed to, well, I will be speaking, perhaps from the steps of Spruill Hall, like Mario Savio. So I was designated to speak 2 weeks later in response. Well, again, the first part of the debate with the liberal speaker went off without a hitch. She spoke in the evening. But no, they have all kinds of different requirements and obligations for any conservative speaker. This is now the third time a conservative speaker they've tried to prevent speaking.
You know what's funny is Ann Coulter is like one of the highest paid speakers in the country. Normally people write an enormous check to have her come speak. Here's a college that doesn't want to hear it. It's ridiculous.
Well, they'll let me speak from a hot air balloon. the week they suggested, first they were suggesting, sometime in September. Well, that's after, you know, all of their other unconstitutional restrictions and requirements and ruses they put on my speech that, you know, normally conservative speakers say, well, look, no, you don't require this of liberal speakers. This is, you're violating my constitutional rights. All to make sure no one comes to hear the speech. So, for example, Berkeley is insistent that conservative speakers only speak in the middle of the day when kids are in class. We can't give a normal evening speech. But I wanted to speak. I have a nice little speech prepared. I like speaking to college students. I like taking question and answer. It's fun. So I said, okay.
But what is their argument, that it might cause violence? Or
yes, that's the best.
Well, how would somebody making a speech cause violence?
First of all, just to give you the boring law, you are not allowed to the what they're doing is the cops only enforce the law if someone tries to stop a liberal speaker. If a conservative speaker is there and riots break out, The cops in Berkeley stand down. They are on video being, you know, telling people as kids are getting beaten up in front of them, saying, talk to the chief of police. We were told to stand down. We were told to do nothing. Needless to say, there are plenty of court cases on this, and no, the cops cannot only arrest protesters of a particular point of view, which is exactly what Berkeley has done twice now. But moreover, that press conference, I don't know if you saw it yesterday, they had the captain of the Berkeley police sitting there saying, well, there might be crime. What are we going to do?
Yeah.
I don't know, call a cop?
Well,
isn't that your job?
You know,
what are those things hanging from your belt? Do you know which end of the gun? Is that a glue gun, a real gun? It's the craziest thing. It's like a Monty Python sketch having a cop say, we can't do this because people could break the law. See, that's why we have cops, sir.
You know, sometimes I watch that crazy Rachel Maddow show, and I don't like what she's saying, but it doesn't make me want to go beat somebody up or break windows. I mean,
and if you did, I think a cop would arrest you, but that's the point. They don't in Berkeley, adding to, I mean, there are so many defendants to this prospective lawsuit we have here.
You know, these crazy colleges, nobody's allowed to speak or say anything. You know, you always hear about years ago, this senator was the debating champ at Harvard. He was the debating champ at Yale. How are they allowed to debate if you can't give the other side?
No, that's right. Well, that's why even before this latest insularity and fascistic attitude has swept American universities, and it is worse than it's been before. I've never been stopped from speaking at any American college or university. Never, never, never. You know, sometimes protesters come. Usually at the better colleges with the higher SAT scores, they ask questions, and it's really fun because they are smart kids. And I like, you know, I don't know that they've changed my mind, but they might have gotten me to modify a position or something. They've certainly gotten me to admit things are jokes, though I think they should have recognized that in any event. It's always been true, and I have always said this, you could pluck any college Republican off any college campus in America, put him on TV or put her on TV. Right now with Rachel Maddow, Chuck Todd, she could win the debate. But college liberals, and I'm not saying that they're stupid, I'm sure they have reasonably high IQs or whatever the average IQ is. It's that they don't have any practice. They've never had to defend anything. They are really being let down by their educations. They can't argue their way out of a paper bag and just come up with these stupid cliches. Now they seem to be just being infantilized with this foot stamping and calling any opinion they don't like hate speech.
Well, I mean, it's crazy. So who was I talking to today? Somebody very smart and important. They were talking about you, and they said, she's a warrior. She's the bravest person.
Why, thank you.
Yeah, so, but you don't say to yourself sometimes, it's just not worth it. Let me stay home.
Well, I want to give my speech.
Yeah.
I think it's a good speech. And okay, I haven't technically written it yet, and if we can get a court to force them to give me a room to give my speech, as I say, otherwise, I think I may give it in the University of California Chancellor's office, Janet Napolitano.
Oh, yeah.
I think she would enjoy hearing it.
So now what's the exact latest? Your lawyer is going to do something on Monday?
Yes, and actually the letter came through right before I had to go on radio, so I haven't gotten the details, but the gist of it seems to be we can't keep her safe. I know, call a cop.
God, can you, this sounds like, it's like the Twilight Zone. Somebody's going to make a speech, we can't keep her safe?
Yes, but it's even better when it's coming from, as it was yesterday at the press conference, a cop sitting in his uniform with a gun on his hip. I mean, the men working for these two chiefs of police, the one for the campus of Berkeley and one for the town of Berkeley, the rank-and-file police must be so humiliated. I mean, their kids are watching on TV. Hey, what do you do for a living, Dad? I arrest lawbreakers, but apparently you don't. You can't.
Well, how come when there's like a 15,000 student George Soros paid for march, they can police that? That's okay.
It is viewpoint discrimination, absolutely 100% unconstitutional to be discriminating against speech this way.
That's unbelievable. And this is not just University of California at Berkeley, but there's other colleges that are doing this. And shouldn't they immediately have all government funding cut off?
Yes. Yes, they should.
And somebody should take this up. I mean, somebody should get the government stop putting any money into it as long as there's censorship there.
Yes, they should. I'd also suggest some, you know, some minor but reasonable measures, like having Donald Trump call out the National Guard to let me give my speech.
Yeah, you know, President Kennedy had to send the National Guard to take James Meredith to school.
No, I know. I know. No, you cannot. Actually, it is a beautiful analogy. When they come back and say, oh, no, we're not interfering with free speech, we just have all these various arbitrary and unreasonable requirements. It is like the Democrat Southern sheriff saying, oh, no, 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 we're letting black people vote. They just have to name the first 11 presidents in alphabetical order.
So,
no, you can't input arbitrary and unreasonable requirements on someone's exercise of a constitutional right, and this is a constitutional right. The College Republicans and this nonpartisan group, Berkeley something or other, I really got to get their name since it was their idea and they're not getting any credit for this. But anyway, they invited me to speak, and it's their First Amendment rights.
Hey, you know, I you might have been kidding, but it's very serious. In the early 60s, troops had to be used all over the country to integrate schools, and I don't think it's a bad idea. Send out the Army, the National Guard, and troops to allow free speech in schools.
Yes.
It's a good idea. It's a good cause. Well, everybody go to AnnCoulter.com and sign up there. You can get her latest column. Hey, if you haven't gotten the book, In Trump We Trust, a big bestseller, go get it. And AnnCoulter.com. Of course, follow Ann Coulter on Twitter. Now, you'll be posting all weekend the latest on what's happening, right?
Yes, I'll send out this latest letter. I tweeted the letter, the letter sent by our attorney, Harmeet Dhillon, this morning. Incidentally, an immigrant, and yet in one generation she picked up the whole concept of freedom of speech and the rule of law. But Berkeley administrators can't. How long has Berkeley been around?
Yeah.
They can't pick it up in 100 years.
Well, okay. Follow Ann Coulter on Twitter. You can get the latest on this throughout the weekend. Ann Coulter, thanks for being with us.
Good to talk to you, Mark.
All right. Take care. What a situation. It's Mark Simone here for Sean Hannity.